Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Freddie Williams Evans and Anna Rita Scott about their book, Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. Freddie Evans and Anna Rita Scott are natural collaborators for Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. Freddie Williams Evans is an arts educator, independent scholar, and author of many books for children, as well as Congo Square, African Roots in New Orleans, which received the 2012 Louisiana Humanities Book of the Year, and influenced the city ordinance, which made Congo Square the official name of that historic landmark. She received the 2024 Lifetime Contribution to the Humanities Award from the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Anna Rita Smith Scott met John Scott when they were both students at Xavier University, and they were married 41 years. An educator, she taught elementary grades in public and Catholic schools in New Orleans, as well as religious education at Epiphany Church. And today, she manages the largest collection of her husband's work. Today, we're talking about the beautiful new book, Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. Welcome, Freddie, from Seattle, I hear.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Susan, for having us.
And Anna Rita, it is so lovely to meet you.
Thank you. It's nice to meet you, too.
So tell me, you two, how did this book first come about? Whose idea was it? And how'd you all get together?
Well, Susan, as you know, most of the artwork that's now on exhibit in the Helles Foundation John Scott Center, It was once displayed in the office suites of LEH on the third floor. So during one of my visits, I mentioned to Miranda Restovich, who's the president and executive director of LEH, that we needed a book that exposed John's work to children, especially the children of New Orleans. As an arts educator, and you mentioned that, and administrator, I wrote grants and lesson plans for artist residencies and often included books in them. So Miranda invited me to submit a proposal. And when I saw Anna Rita the next time, I mentioned it to her and invited her to collaborate with me. So actually, that was the best move that I made throughout the whole book, was inviting her to be a part of this.
Now, Anna Rita, had you two known each other a long time? How did you all work together?
We have known each other for a long time, but we only became close within the last 8 years when Freddie invited me to co-author the book with her.
And how'd you divide up the work? There's a lot of work in this book. So much beautiful art. It's such a wonderful text.
It wasn't divided. We worked together on everything.
Every page.
We took one chunk at a time, you know, one bite at a time, so to speak. But one thing that we did do was we had regular meetings. We set a date during a week at one point where we came together and worked, and then we separated and, you know, over the course of that week of the other days, we had individual projects that we worked on or aspects of the book.
Now, the book is structured into three main parts: growing up in New Orleans, beginning a career and family, and building a legacy. Freddie, what can you tell us about John Scott's childhood?
Well, John grew up in the Ninth Ward near the Desire neighborhood. He and his five siblings grew up in a household where art was really a way of life. In one of his interviews, he said that whenever his family needed something, they made it. His mother was a skilled seamstress, and she taught him how to embroider at an early age. Although his father was a chef, he taught him basic carpentry skills. So they recognized his gift, his artistic gift, and they encouraged it. As a matter of fact, it was his mother who was the most influential in his decision to pursue a career as an artist, because there were so many people who discouraged him from doing so.
This is an interesting town, isn't it, where so many men think sewing is so important, you know?
And he continued his work into adulthood, embroidering items for even Anna Rita.
I know there's a purse in this book.
Yes.
That was embroidered for you.
My mother-in-law made it.
Yeah.
His mother made it. And he embroidered a shirt for me, but Katrina took it. I had a pair of jeans he had done, a butterfly or something on the leg, and they were taken by Katrina.
Now that is greater love hath no man than someone who will embroider a pair of jeans. I mean, that's a lot of work. Now, Anna Rita, in this book, your family life sounds so rich and so full. And you are bound together by your long time at Xavier, too, being there, and students were part of your life and family.
Yes.
And I wonder if you talk a little bit about revisiting those memories.
We did meet at Xavier, and we had a 5-year engagement, almost courtship. And I really didn't have any experience in art other than things you do in high school and grammar school. But I developed an appreciation for art by being around him before we married. And afterwards, I felt like I was a student too. And I learned so much, and I began to appreciate it so much more than I ever did.
Now, I remember reading that during your courtship, you almost got derailed by a basketball game.
Yes. it was Christmas Eve, and we were supposed to go. We had a date to go to midnight mass together. And I was dressed and ready and waiting, and I waited, and I waited. When I finally heard from him, midnight mass was over with. And when I heard from him, he said he stopped in the park to play basketball with some of his friends, and he completely forgot he had. He was going to mass.
And you forgave him anyway.
Yes.
And basketball did kind of remain an enduring, you know, thing for him.
Yeah, he still played it sometime with friends, and then, but he was right down the court with the kids, with our kids when they came along. You could probably hear him on the floor when he was cheering and rushing and encouraging them.
Can you describe his personality a little bit for us? He seems very adventuresome and brave.
Yes. Life with him was an adventure. Being married to him was an adventure. He was a deep thinker also. Uh-huh. Sometimes he was just, like I said, a deep thinker, quiet and not nothing coming. And then before you knew it, there was a whole entourage of thoughts and ideas he was sharing and trying out. And from those deep thoughts, he create such things that you have seen around the city and in the book. Mm-hmm. And he was a loving and stern father, and he was a loving and encouraging husband. And because he encouraged me when I went to the people program to take some painting classes, and that's important to feel, you know, to feel that he had faith in me that I could do these things. Mm-hmm. Not that I did anything with the painting, but...
And he did everything. He did sculpture. He did painting. He did watercolors. Some of the watercolors
paper
in
making,
this book. Printmaking.
Printmaking, paper making, and glass, and...
No end to it. No end to this talent. No. It was amazing. I loved hearing about how the students were incorporated into your family life as well. And I wonder if you'd tell the story of the bread parties.
Scott would invite the children, the students in his class at Xavier, and a lot of times he'd invite them when there was a well-known author or writer or artist in the city, and he'd have them over, and they would talk, and while people were talking, he'd always have somebody side by side with him making bread in the kitchen. And while the bread was rising, he would get into the conversation. And I mean, many, many conversations were born at those bread parties.
And he was so smart to know that you would have to wait and you would smell the bread. So that's a useful learning tool that many people, I think, should carry forward. Thank you. you're just joining us, I'm talking with Freddie Williams Evans and Anna Rita Scott about their book, Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. Now, building a legacy has a lot to do with books like this one, and this really celebrates the John Scott Center in the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities building, as well as his public works. So, Anna Rita, it is such a big responsibility to care for a partner's legacy. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that work, because it's often unsung and unpraised, and it's very difficult.
Yes, it is. I had no idea what would be facing me when he was gone. Mm-hmm. But beneficial to me, I have very, very helpful, encouraging, and loving children that are taking the realms. My oldest daughter has a husband who's a lawyer, and they have started the John Scott Trust. And she's been at my beck and call. They have been at my beck and call with everything that has happened with the LEH, with the art itself, with the gallery, and it's been a tremendous journey.
And the Hellas Foundation has been instrumental.
The Hellas Foundation was responsible for the John Scott Center.
And the center, which we should say for people who don't know, go see it. It's on the first floor of the building at 938 Lafayette Street.
Yes.
It is beautiful, beautiful. But that work is ongoing. That will be part of your life.
Right.
Yeah. And John Scott was not the only artist in your family either.
Well, my son has picked up the genes, the talent from his dad. And he was making paper with his dad when he was about maybe 6 years old. I'm not quite sure the age, but anyway, he was doing bronze with his dad and all the other things he experienced just growing up. And he has become a pretty well-known artist. He has murals here in the city.
He has one also, beautiful mural on the outside,
on the outside of the John Scott Center. And he has a piece, a Homer Plessy mural on Homer Plessy Way out in the Bywater area. And he's constantly, constantly moving, just like his daddy.
Must be fun for you to see.
Very proud of him.
Oh, now, Freddie, a scholarly legacy needs to come along with the preservation of the works and the placement of the art itself. So that's why books like this are so important. So tell me some of the things you all thought about as you figured out what you wanted this book to be.
Yes, well, first, the book itself is a community collaboration, which is the way John worked. Mm-hmm. So to start, we consulted his close friends and artists like Martin Payton, Ron Bechet, Moreau, Moray Beauchamp Bird, Arnold Bourgeois, Kalamuya Asalam, and of course his son, Ayo. We wanted to know from them what pieces of work they thought just had to be in the book, you know. And we gathered stories from his family members, from all five children, and from Anna Rita. And then the book was designed and laid out by two of his students, Lydia Araya and Cheryl DeCave. And if there were photographs needed, we called on one of his close friends, Eric Waters.
Oh, yes.
So we see that collaboration, that community input going on. But one thing that we're also very proud of is that John's artwork is on the outside and his words are on the inside, meaning that Ayo, his son, designed the cover of the book, and he used one of John's self-portraits. And then Anna Rita and I included his quotes from various interviews throughout the book. So readers are essentially hearing his voice. They are understanding and learning his direct thoughts about art making, about symbols and symbolisms that he used. They're learning from him about his love for family, for teaching, and his love for New Orleans.
And it's written in a very specific style so that you could reach the largest audience possible. Talk about that challenge.
Exactly. If you remember, I said that initially my idea was to create a book for children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now at 100 pages, this is no longer the 32-page concept of a picture book. But we still wanted it to be accessible to young audiences. So it is on a level that is accessible to them, but the artwork is appealing to all ages. That was our goal in the end.
And you also include a map of the works that are out there in the public for anyone to see, which is so useful.
Yes. We wanted people to know the extent of his art, and there are even art pieces in other states. But we didn't include all of those, but at least we wanted them to know which was the art pieces that were available in the New Orleans landscape.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Freddie Williams Evans and Anna Rita Scott about their book, Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. It's just an irresistible question for me, but I have to ask you, what's your favorite work of John Scott's, and why is it your favorite? Anna Rita?
Every time he created a new sculpture, I seemed to change my mind as to what was my favorite. However, I thought about it a little longer, and I'd say the Spirit Gates at the NoMa Museum are mine, because he tells the story of how Black people could not go into the museum up until a certain time, the year. And the gates symbolically represent the fact that now everybody can go in. We can all go in. And I could relate so much to that growing up during those times. And I thought about it, the Spirit House on DC Boulevard is running in first place. But I have a special feeling for that because they used the work of the children at the two schools right across from the piece. Like we said earlier, I was a kindergarten teacher and I had five children. So it just meant so much for those children to be able to go out there and see something they actually worked on. They helped their parts with.
It's close to your heart and everything that's important to you. Mm-hmm. Now, Freddie, what's your favorite?
I don't really have a favorite piece because there is always more to John's work. So when I think about the social inferences, the historical references, his clever designs, his profound storytelling about circumstances and events in the world, it's really hard for me to select one piece over the other. But there was one piece that stands out to me, and that's Dancing at the Crossroads. Mm-hmm. And this is the sculpture that visitors first see when they enter the gallery, the Hellis Foundation, John Scott Gallery. This piece is so significant because it really embodies many or most of the elements that are characteristic of his work. His body of work. There's a reference to African spirituality in it, and he honors the ancestors through this work. There's African American folklore. There's improvisation. He embodies the symbols, or he includes the symbols and symbolism that he uses in so much of his other work. There are the bright, bold colors, the primary shapes. There is a kinetic component to it. And it's just magnificent. It's bold, it's huge. So that one stands out to me, although I cannot say it is a favorite over any of the others.
So beautiful, but never simple.
Exactly.
Now, one of the things you do with such love and care in this book is capture the essence of the man. And that's in the very title, Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. Not only was that important to John, it's what you're doing in this book. So would you tell us a little bit about that phrase and what that meant to him?
When Scott was working at home with his mom, she would tell him, when somebody tells you thank you, you say, pass it on, because that's going to come back to you anyway. And he continued to use that throughout his life. And so we're just passing it on.
And Freddie, what did that come to mean to you over the course of working on this book?
I see it as something that is continuous. He's continually passing on the work to anybody who views it, anybody who reads about it, who studies his work, who understands all of those social inferences and historical references that I mentioned. You know, there's more than just what meets the eye. He's passing on so much to us, so much history, so much culture, especially when we look at the work from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We can see what's going on in our streets and the history of the city through his artwork. So I think he's continually passing on to those who are living, to those who are seeing it and viewing it, although he used that term when he was living. He's still using it when he's no longer with us.
So much spirit still in the air, you know, it's really a beautiful thing. We've been talking with Freddie Williams Evans and Anna Rita Scott, who are co-authors of Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott. You can meet them October 15th at the John Scott Center at Turner's Hall, 938 Lafayette Street, from 6 to 8 when the book makes its debut. Freddie, Anna Rita, thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Diane McPhail signs Follow the Stars Home Friday, October 11th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Adam Dennis presents a story time and signs Gary and his little friend Jerry Saturday, October 12th at 11 at Garden District Bookshop. The Tarrytown Branch Library celebrates its 50th anniversary Saturday, October 12th from 1 to 4, 680 Heritage Avenue in Tarrytown. The Splice Poetry Series presents a poetry reading by Stein Ann and Tanner Menard, Saturday, October 12th at 6 at the Saturn Bar. Kalami Yassalam signs his novel Walkin' Blues and appears in conversation with Kelly Harris DeBerry, Monday, October 14th at 6 at Octavia Books. Lucky Bean Poetry Night features an open mic and Natalie Parker Lawrence, Monday, October 14th at 6:30 at Blue Cypress Books. Eric Kim signs Modern Creole, A Taste of New Orleans Culture and Cuisine, Tuesday, October 15th at 5:30 at Octavia Books. Freddie Williams Evans and Anna Rita Scott discuss and sign Passing It On, The Art of John T. Scott, Tuesday, October 15th at the Hellas Foundation John Scott Center, 938 Lafayette Street. News from One Book, One New Orleans. One Book, One New Orleans presents The Seventh Ward is Home, celebrating the setting of this year's selection, Black Creole Chronicles by Mona Lisa Saloy. That's Saturday, October 12th from 4 to 6 at The Autocrat, 1725 St. Bernard. Mona Lisa Saloy will read, and there will be a panel discussion featuring Big Chief Daryl Montana and Big Chief Diane Honoré of the Yellow Pocahontas. Time to vote for the next One Book selection? Cast your vote at the Facebook page or the website for one of the following three finalists: Letting in Air and Light by Teresa Tumanello Brader, Nola Face, A Latina's Life in the Big Easy by Brooke Champagne, or Daughters of the New Year by E.M. Tran. And here's a very special reading group. Xavier University of Louisiana, Southern University of New Orleans, and Dillard are joining forces to host a series of groups focused on the works of acclaimed scholar Sadia Hartman, leading up to her visit to New Orleans in spring 2025. The series will explore four of Hartman's seminal works, each at a different institution. It begins at Xavier with a discussion of Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments, Intimate Histories of the Riotous Black Girls, Troublesome Women, and Queer Radicals. Friday, October 24th from 6 to 8 in the Civic Center on the first floor of Xavier University of Louisiana Library. Discussion will be led by Robin Vander, Associate Professor of English and African American and Diaspora Studies. And get ready for the Louisiana Book Festival coming up November 2nd, 9 to 4 in downtown Baton Rouge at the Louisiana State Capitol, the State Library of Louisiana, the Capitol Park Museum, and the surrounding park area. The festival is free and open to the public with more than 200 authors coming to entertain readers of all ages, along with activities for children and teenagers. This is the festival's 20th year. The Louisiana Writer Award will also celebrate its 25th year. This year's recipient is Baton Rouge area native poet David Kirby, longtime professor at Florida State University. And the festival's 15th One Book, One Festival program, led by Dr. Gary Richards, will feature Eudora Welty's The Optimist's Daughter. Author and illustrator William Joyce will debut the anxiously awaited Rocket Puppies, his first book in 8 years. And Ashley Elston returns with her adult debut novel, First Lie Wins, a New York Times bestseller, the Penguin Random House's best fiction book for the first half of the year, and the January pick for the Reese Witherspoon Book Club. The festival will also host the premiere of Books Across America, a documentary from filmmaker Mason Engel. He travels to 50 states, reads 50 books, and interviews 50 authors in 50 days. Among those interviewed is Louisiana's own Maurice Carlos Ruffin. For more information about the 2024 Book Festival, visit louisianabookfestival.org or check out the festival's Facebook page. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.